Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in the NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. We apologize for the audio quality on this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour. We are practicing social distancing and recording in our individual homes.
Just yesterday, Congress passed a $484 billion bill to provide additional funding for the Paycheck Protection Program, among other things. The Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act includes $380 billion for small businesses, $75 billion for hospitals, and $25 billion for COVID-19 testing. On this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour, Marcy, John, and Chris review the new law and what we may expect next. Can you review the specifics of this new law? What exactly will it be funding?
This new aid program is really just an extension, like you said, Dan, in the opening of the CARES Act. So it's going back and funding some of those programs that we all know have already run out of money. So things like the Paycheck Protection Program, the EIDL, and the Emergency FMLA. A lot of this is really focused on small businesses. Again, as you heard, so many of them were lined up to be able to get loans through the PPP program, and the funding just ran out. There's also some assistance for smaller banks to be able to help them to be able to provide loans. We know oftentimes that small businesses work with their local banks, and those are the relationships they have. And so that's where they're most likely to be approved for a loan. And when the funding wasn't really going through those mechanisms, it made it a little harder for small businesses to be able to be approved. So this will help try to infuse some money into that system as well and help those small businesses obtain loans to keep their doors open. And remember, with the Paycheck Protection Program loans, they can use those for things like covering, obviously, the paychecks of their employees, but also things like their benefit plans. So this helps small businesses to keep their employees on their employer health insurance. The other funding here, as Dan mentioned, was more funding for hospitals and more funding for testing. I think that's pretty straightforward. And then we didn't see a lot of changes. We did see one small change on how agricultural workers would be able to apply for the PPP loans, but that's really the only big policy shift that we saw for this just extension of the CARES Act, which is really what this bill was.
Yeah, Marcy is correct, especially on the loan portion. That money went so quickly the first time it was out there. There are tighter restrictions on really making sure it's not businesses over 500 employees. Previously, it said 500 employees in one location, which is why the Ruth's Chris's and the Shake Shacks of the world were also getting these loans when small business owners got stuck in the pipeline. So much of the bill last time was really money that was going to the large banks, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and others that really have relationships with much bigger businesses. So the mom and pops generally got left by the wayside, or they put in their application and it just never got processed. This bill specifically, where the last one did not have money, now goes through credit unions and community banks. And community banks are defined by how much their holdings are. And so they're much smaller. And many community banks often work with small business owners because they really know them in their community. And there's a more of a personal relationship that you are literally lending money to your neighbor versus the Bank of America's and Wells Fargo's, where you're kind of just a number. And for the average small business owner, unfortunately, not very relevant for Bank of America the way the big corporations are. So the big corporations were getting a lot of assistance to quickly process and get funding. And that's why you see these headlines about these very large corporations who claimed that they only have 500 employees in that particular location. And that's how they got around it the first time. So we are hopeful that this money will go to much more smaller businesses. That being said, I think this money will run out rather quickly because it still won't meet the demand, even if we are focusing on truly small businesses, it still won't meet the level of demand that's out there.
I just want to comment on the Small Business Administration, since they will be responsible for pushing out these small business loans. they, in fact, need to enhance their systems to accommodate the smaller lenders, and they've been encouraged to do so. So hopefully they get online quickly so that the loans can be processed timely.
How exactly did this bill come into fruition? Negotiations between Democrats and Republicans were reportedly tense in the last couple of weeks.
Well, they were. They first couldn't decide whether, you know, to just simply fund it as is or expand it, and if so, in what way. There were demands for state and local funding, and then Leader McConnell was opposed to that. I think we really ended up where we could have been earlier. It lasted longer than it needed to be. I think it's difficult also when you can't negotiate face-to-face. They did this by conference call and by email. It was all leadership-driven, which is a good lesson for us in that this is really how things are going to be done for the foreseeable future. I've talked to some rank-and-file members who are desperate to be engaged in conversation, but obviously are not. And they're eager in some ways to come back to Washington so they could be part of the process.
Yeah, I think it became very clear that particularly the PPP program was going to quickly run out of money. Secretary Mnuchin, I know, saw this first coming and quickly tried to contact congressional leaders. I think there was then a dispute on what should be in this next package, and that's why it did not happen quicker. Mitch McConnell very clearly wanted just $250 billion for the PPP program, replenish the program, and do that now and quickly before it ran out. Obviously, that did not happen. The program did run out of money, and we're in the position we are now. Congressional Democrats wanted more money for hospitals, testing for state and local, and wanted more restrictions around that small business loan money. They also wanted more oversight of those funds. I think that all slowed things down. I think that you ended up in a compromised position. There is not money in here for state and locals, but there is more money in here for testing, more money for the hospitals. And now there are more restrictions around those loans and making sure they're trying to go to truly small businesses. I think that negotiation, unfortunately, did slow things down by a couple of weeks where we could have been getting this money out the door to small businesses to be able to keep people employed, or tests in the hospitals and others to be able to make sure that we're really combating this disease. The only way we're really going to get this economy up and running again is if we get the disease under control.
When you don't know how many bites of the apple you may get in terms of opportunities to pass legislation, I think you just tend to fight harder at the moment for those things that you believe in. And I think that speaks to Chris's point about those things that were up for debate.
And I just really want to emphasize what John started off with this question about many of the rank and file members not having much of a say until they were able to come back and vote on the bill on Thursday. And even then, many times were limited to 30 seconds on the floor while voting. And so really felt as though they were not included in the process of getting to this final bill. And in many cases, we're also hearing from members of Congress, and I think this is important as constituents for you all to know, that many of them are really grappling with what exactly their role is in this pandemic. Is their duty to be here in Washington, D.C., working on legislation? Is their duty to be in their home districts, being alongside their constituents? And this has been, I know, very difficult for many members. I've seen some that are grappling with flying back and forth across the country during this time, putting themselves in danger to be able to come back and vote, and wondering if this is really what is in their best interest of their country, and feeling very divided in what their duty is. And so I think many of them, while feeling that, then felt very discouraged that they were left out of much of the conversation for these bills. And I think we're going to see them trying much harder to be part of the conversation as we move into some of the future phases that we'll talk about in a moment. But that also may lead to some longer periods of time for negotiation if more and more of them want their voices heard in these packages that we'll see in the future.
So we discussed some of this, but can you speak more to what isn't included in this package? What were some provisions that did not make it into this bill?
So Chris touched on this earlier, and I think what was very striking that was not included was funding for state and local government relief. This is something that there's been a big outcry for, and many thought would be included for this piece of legislation since it was seen as an extension of the CARES Act. And when it came down to it, that just wasn't included. As Chris also mentioned, some feel like the hospital funding may have been a way to kind of give a nod to the state and local governments, but I don't think it was enough for some of them that are really struggling right now to be able to keep their frontline forces out there, their first responders and things like that. So it was very striking that that wasn't included. And then another piece that I think wasn't included, and we didn't really expect it to be, but I think some were really hoping, I know some of our members were hoping for it to be included, was an expansion of this relief for employers over 500. Like I said, we didn't really expect to see that here because of the conversations that had gone on. It is something that could be put on the table later on, but it's been very difficult to find an agreement for exactly how to provide that relief to those larger employers. Although Chris gave a great example earlier of some of those businesses taking advantage of the PPP loans that maybe shouldn't. And I think that's really what's preventing members of Congress from moving forward for relief for employers over 500. But we also know from all of you and from the messages that we've been getting from you and your clients that there are a number of large employers over 500 that are really struggling and need that relief. But unfortunately, that just wasn't included here.
I think one of the other big areas that wasn't included that I know a lot of people have been asking for, it were really things around healthcare coverage. For example, you were laid off from your employer and what options are then left to you? For example, going on a COBRA. There has been a lot of people who are pushing for the federal government to fund COBRA so that you have your health insurance. Last time around when the economy went down in 08, the government offered 65% coverage of a policy. Many carriers, organizations, employer groups, and others this time were asking for 90% coverage. This way that we can really ensure that people can afford to have that COBRA coverage, because we know that's not cheap for the individual. But that would be a good way of keeping you on your employer plan and then allowing you easily, when your employer opens back up, to then again remain on that employer plan. And with 90% coverage, that would be a great way of being able to retain that health insurance. Or another thing that people are proposing regarding retaining coverage is that maybe you've lost your employer plan, and now you do, since you've lost your employer plan, you're eligible for an SEP. If you go over to the ACA markets, and because of your income level, you're not getting any assistance with that health insurance program. And with your employer, you were obviously getting assistance for that health insurance program. So now the health insurance you're getting through the ACA is actually more expensive. There are many people proposing that we expand the assistance that you get in the ACA for people who are coming in from the employer market in order to expand it for people further up the economic ladder above 400% of poverty, but also for young people to make sure that they're able to now get some assistance when they were used to their employers paying for that coverage in the past. So those are the sorts of things that we are concerned about, making sure that the individuals can actually get on to health insurance and be able to afford it at similar sort of rates that they were at least getting from when they were in their employer. And particularly in essentially what is a healthcare crisis, we need to make sure that people have health insurance to be able to cover those costs. And so those sorts of things, healthcare-wise, that we were disappointed not to see in this piece of legislation, and we are hoping that in the next COVID bill, those sorts of things can be addressed.
And another thing that they didn't do, while we're on what wasn't included and what Congress didn't do before we get to future planning, is they didn't come to an agreement on distance voting or whether they would be able to vote by proxy for the House. This is something that at first there were plans earlier in the day on Thursday to try to be able to vote on a program for them to be able to do so, and they could not agree. And so now there's a task force that's looking into the different possibilities of how they could vote remotely or distance vote or vote by proxy. And again, kind of going back to some of my comments earlier about the struggle with members of Congress and what their duty is, whether to be here in DC voting or home with their constituents, I think if they can set up something for some type of voting by proxy or distance voting, it could make it easier for us to see these bills being voted on in a more rapid basis instead of having such a long term in between. Right now, we're not slated to see them back until May 4th. So that means that the next phase could be a couple of weeks out before we see anything passed. And it's not to say that if they are able to vote by proxy or distance vote that they would do it any faster. It's just a hope that they would. So with them leaving without having a clear decision on this means that they will have to come back in person to vote for the next round of bills, and we'll be waiting to see if they come up with a different type of plan for voting moving on if they don't feel as though it's safe to do so with social distancing and the proximity of the quarters in the House for when they do come together for votes.
Yeah, I talked to Leader McCarthy's office about this whole timeline for how long this is going to continue in terms of access to the Hill and things returning to a more normal schedule on the Hill. And they indicated that they believe it's going to be a while. So to Marcy's point, I think they've got to come up with some solution, but not just for voting, but for how are they going to conduct committee hearings, because committee process is still important.
Right. And some of the committees have dipped their toe into some of the meeting structures that we all have been enjoying on some levels as we are all working from home and working remotely. So some of the committees are trying this out to be able to conduct their meetings virtually, and we'll see if that gets expanded to conducting further business and conducting votes. But even if they can conduct some of their committee voting remotely, it would speed up the process for many of these bills in the future.
As we mentioned, we certainly expect more COVID-19 legislation in the near future. When might we expect to see that?
So even though they're coming back technically the week of May 4th, I think it's going to take them time to then work through this process and get ideas and so forth. I think the earliest mid-May, but probably more towards the end of May. And there's a lot of pent-up demand and a lot of difficult discussions to be had. My opinion, it'll be later in May.
Yeah, I think we expect Congress to start working on this in May. I think it's going to get harder this next bill coming around. I think the negotiations get more difficult. I think there are people concerned about how much money has been spent. I think that there still will be the debate around state and local government. So I think we are headed to a much longer discussion on the funding issues. I think also we'll need to get more feedback on how the testing is going out there. I also think as the science starts to evolve and we start looking at things like antibody testing, start getting to the point of a vaccine and others, those are also sorts of things that I think will require Congress to have legislative action on. For example, will antibody tests, virus and others all be covered by your insurance policy, your private insurance policy? Those sorts of things like that, I think, are going to be part of the conversation and also obviously add costs onto the overall system. One of the things that I know a lot of the insurance carriers and others are trying to look at or trying to forecast, what are the health care costs that are going out there? And as we look into coming years, where will the rates go? You know, there's some evidence that we've saved some money on health care costs through telemedicine, through delaying elective surgeries. But do these costs then come back as soon as elective surgeries are opened back up? And as we start paying state for things like vaccines, for treatments, for antibody tests, and who will bear the cost of those, I think are things that will need to be discussed in upcoming legislation. When it comes to insurance policies, if it starts to look like the actuaries are expecting double-digit increases in premiums next year, there needs to be some sort of cost-sharing mechanism or others in order to try to reduce insurance premiums next year so that people don't lose their health insurance next year because of what happened this particular year.
And some of the things that we are expecting to see when they come back and the discussions that they'll have, you know, we can't look into our crystal ball and promise that some of these things will be in the next phase. But many of them are some of the things that we've mentioned earlier that were not included in this bill. But other things that we know that they'll be looking at are things like pandemic pay for frontline workers. I know we've heard a lot about that in the news, about some of those first responders struggling with their health insurance coverage, and also with possibly being laid off or having other employment issues if they're working for hospitals that are seeing some of those lower range folks coming in because of the halt on care outside of the coronavirus. But then those that are also working overtime on the front lines and treating those hundreds of patients that are coming in the hotspots, and what we can do for a pandemic premium pay for them. Also looking, of course, at additional SBA funds. But again, as we talked earlier, there are so much funding that's gone out, especially now with this second wave of aid, and whether that's something that can really sit and settle with members of Congress who are concerned about the amount of money that's coming out, that's going to be a big discussion on whether they feel as though they can extend some of those funds. also discussions on the expansion of unemployment insurance benefits and additional individual payments. So we know that that first round of payments went out to individuals on certain incomes that have been impacted and for those that have filled out their taxes. And then there's the website you can go to if you did not do a direct deposit on your taxes, so you can get your individual payment if you qualify with your income. I know a lot of folks are discussing whether another round of that needs to be released, especially as we move further into more weeks of folks that are either having restricted hours or being furloughed or laid off and not having that full income. Some of those individual payments are really helping them to pay their rent or be able to afford groceries. And that trouble won't go away as we move further into staying at home and social distancing. So these are all pieces that they're going to look at. And I think one of the biggest pieces is going to be they're coming back in May and we're moving into June on the calendar. Something that people are just been kind of holding their breath and hoping will be okay is November, what we're going to do for elections. And I think as we get further into the calendar year, there is going to be a lot of pressure for Congress to act on how exactly we'll be voting in November, especially after seeing what happened in Wisconsin and having those numbers of cases tick up after their in-person voting in Wisconsin. I think it'll be very hard for Congress to get to go into the summer without having some decision on vote by mail or other provisions for November. And then, of course, we have our long list of for the administration and Congress for now and into May that we have submitted, and those are available online and also in the April 10th podcast where we go through all of the asks that we have of the administration and Congress for some of the simple relief efforts that they can provide for employers and individuals.
I think that for the Republican conference, they want to see how the existing programs are working or not working, and where do they need to target? I think Marcy covered a number of areas that make some sense. If this extends into, you know, deep into the summer and into the fall, there may need to be another round of unemployment assistance to individuals. But I think that there is a great deal of anxiety about the amount of money going out the door. I think that in terms of how we're going to vote in November, that is just a whole nother kettle of fish that will be very contentious. There's been talk about more bills beyond the next one that we anticipate. But if it includes remote voting, that's going to be a fairly tough sell unless there's enough evidence to push Republicans to do that, because that is something I think they're going to strenuously oppose.
Yeah, I think it's important to also not just look at the next piece of legislation, but I really think a lot of change, particularly when it comes to our industry, employers, and the employer-based healthcare system will really be on the regulatory side. So even as Congress continues to battle out and figure out how much money to spend on certain topics, I think NAHU obviously is advocating for a lot of employer relief, and that sort of stuff can continue to happen on the regulatory side. I think even if the next bill takes some time to get together, I do expect things to continue to change when it comes to healthcare in this country over the next few months because of the regulatory pieces.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to this week?
This week, we're toasting to small businesses. You are the backbone of America's economy. We know so many of you NAHU members are small businesses and support small businesses as your client. And many of you have received PPP loans or are applying for them. And we want to recognize you as you keep your doors open and keep your employees on your payroll and keep us all healthy and safe.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NAHU.org.